Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Next year is the World Cup, as you know, and as we sit here today, we still have some skin in that game, and prayers are being offered up and mass is said, and we live in hope. But a new book explores the impact of the world's largest sporting event, from its effect on culture to its political and social role. Joining me now is Simon Cooper, Financial Times writer and author of World Cup Fever, A Footballing Journey in 9 Tournaments. How are you today, Simon?
Very good. Nice to speak to you.
It sounds like you've got a bit of a dream job, is it?
I, like a lot of journalists who go to World Cups, I spend a lot of time there whining. Journalists are very good at complaining, but it is exhausting to cover a World Cup. So I also, I could complain to you about hotels in the Japanese provinces, getting up at 5 a.m., that kind of thing.
But you don't want to, because you know at the end of it, you're sitting there in a beautiful stand watching two football teams playing. And when you were growing up, that was the dream.
It was, and sometimes even as a middle-aged man, it sometimes is still the dream, yes. Occasionally, I think, like France-Argentina in the last World Cup final, you know, privilege.
I can only imagine. I have to say, I personally feel like I've lived my life in World Cups. From remembering my first one to here in Ireland, it was Italia 90, which I think was a foundation tournament for Ireland as an emerging kind of confident nation.
Yeah, I was at Italia 90. It was my first World Cup attending in person. And I do think it was special for Ireland. It had two particular meanings. One, it's sort of just around the start of the Celtic Tiger, and it's the sort of emergence of an Ireland that is confident and optimistic and successful in the world, outward looking. And the other thing is that it sort of redefines what Ireland is, which is a country that includes fully its diaspora. And of course, this, I think, had been an Irish idea forever, but the team embodies it in a way that only a football team can. You know, when you see your national team playing, you know, those 11 people out there in the plastic shirts, those young men, they actually, you know, for the 90 minutes, they become Ireland. And that Ireland that they embodied was a team that largely had lived, grown up in the UK, but yeah, it was clearly Irish.
And managed by a man who'd won the World Cup in 1966. Those messages are not lost on you. You see the whole picture. You realise that, you know, there's a lot of complexity going on with being Ireland. How different was that Italia 90 to, say, Qatar 22?
Well, Italia 90, you have two British teams, England and Scotland. You have two teams from the whole of Asia and two teams from the whole of Africa. So really, the World Cup from 1930 to 1990 is pretty much a European, Latin American affair. It's a duopoly. And only very gradually, so in 1990, Cameroon stunned the world. They play brilliant football. First African teams to reach the quarters. And only from 1990 does the World Cup go global. And later you have tournaments in, you know, places that have never had it before, like the US, Japan, Korea, Qatar, South Africa. And so now the World Cup is truly a World Cup, but it's still always won either by Western Europeans or by Leo Messi.
I'm tempted to say thank God for that. Also, it is huge in how countries kind of identify or you know, express their identities. West Germany were huge in that, weren't they?
Yeah, so, you know, the Germans had to find a new kind of nationalism that is not toxic after 1945. And in West Germany, that becomes a kind of football nationalism. In 1954, West Germany wins its first World Cup. And, you know, huge numbers of people come out onto the streets. The train with the players returning from Switzerland with the World Cup is mobbed at every station. And it's the first time that Germans can be proud of their country again. And so 1954 to 1990, really the life of the Federal Republic of West Germany, they win three World Cups. And it's the only kind of safe expression of German nationalism. So Germany finds a way of being itself, being proud of itself through football.
To look at how it's been changing, one of the big things we're seeing is that it's no longer being held in just one country. It tends to be held now in a kind of collection of countries. Do you think that's changing it?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's become a sprawling affair. and much lower in quality. So next summer's World Cup will have 48 teams for the first time ever, up from 32. When I was a kid, there were only 16 teams. So it's really not the same animal anymore. It's too big for almost any country to host by itself. So for the first time ever, it will be in three countries. You won't have that intensity of place like when I went to Italy in 1990 and the whole country was living the World Cup. That won't be the case in the US or Canada particularly, maybe more so in Mexico. So something is lost and you'll see a lot of bad football. So, you know, my rule of thumb is most teams at a World Cup are worse than, say, Everton or Fulham. It's not as good as the best club football we see.
Right, and for fans, it's an epic voyage, isn't it? If your team progresses, you're traveling huge distances in order to see them in the next round. One of the big things too is how people. Well, I think the Qatar is seen as kind of a low point, but money is changing things beyond recognition, isn't it?
Yeah, so you have countries like the US or Germany or England, which have the stadiums to host the World Cup anyway, you know, because they have very strong domestic sports scenes. But otherwise, you know, almost no country wants to spend that kind of money. South Africa and Brazil spent the money to host the World Cup, and it's just lost forever, and you end up with these white elephant stadiums that are never full again. In the book, I described going back to South Africa last year, sitting in an empty World Cup stadium for a club match. Very sad experience. So, yeah, and then you have countries like Qatar and Saudi Arabia that say, well, we don't need stadiums either, but we're willing to spend the money. And so I was in Qatar. They built what, 8 stadiums, which are all empty and useless now, have no function. Saudi Arabia will build many more for 2034. So what you've seen in football the last few years is that the Gulf states are kind of buying prestige and acceptance in the eyes of the West by buying into football, also through the clubs they own, like Newcastle, Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester City.
Where does that leave your average fan who has grown up where moments from World Cups are seared into their memory, passes, results, particular players coming to the fore, giants of football like lining up against you? They're fantastic memories.
Yeah, and they still have them. So, I mean, I see it with my kids. You know, everyone complains about the World Cup being in Qatar, and I completely understand that. And that's fair enough. And Saudi Arabia is even worse. But when the football starts, people live for the football. And I don't think we should take that joy away from people. So I think on the one hand, we should say as journalists, look, you know, these are bad things that are being done to migrants or LGBTQ people in Qatar or Saudi Arabia. But on the other hand, you should have the pleasure of watching a great game at a World Cup. You should have those memories seared, just like you did when you were 8 or I did when I was 8. You know, next year, 8-year-olds will have that, and they'll have that in Saudi Arabia. And so I think you have to keep both those thoughts in your head at the same time. Yes, you know, there is money buying stuff, there are evil regimes, but football is something beautiful, and it also brings us all together. It sounds corny, but it does. The whole world watches the World Cup, and it's a very sort of peaceful and happy affair.
And we adore the game here. So let's hope we get to hear Troy Parrott's name on the highest stages of the world. We live in hope. Simon, thank you very much for joining us. A pleasure talking to you. That's Simon Cooper there, Financial Times writer and author of World Cup Fever, A Footballing Journey in 9 Tournaments.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.